Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Some stories creep into your mind. Others claw their way in and refuse to leave. Brian Asbury's Waking the Dead is here. 8 bone-chilling tales of terror and retribution brought to life by the production team behind Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and the voices of Otis Gyre, Drew Blood, and Jeff Sturtevant. Revenge. Violence. A dark humor that cuts deep. From a quadriplegic's horrifying payback to a mother's gruesome fate, Asbury holds nothing back. This is horror that stays with you. Waking the Dead, available now on Amazon and Audible. Lock the doors, turn off the lights, and press play.
Chilling Tales for Dark Nights.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable tales of terror. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Good evening, listeners, and welcome back to the Horror Hill podcast. I'm your host, Eric Peabody. And tonight's episode includes two tales to chill your blood on this winter's night. First, we'll read Beneath the Floor by Owen Porter. Mark has just inherited his father's house, and in the process of cleaning it up, finds a strange trap door under a rug. Soon, odd things start happening, and Mark finds himself drawn to the trap door again and again. After that, we'll be cracking into There's Something Different About Her by Raz T. Slasher. Following a night out with friends, Aaron comes home to find his wife suddenly back from a vacation. As the days progress, he starts noticing that she's taking more baths than usual, always leaving behind an odd smell and a red ring in the tub. Let's get started, shall we? You're listening to the free edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, so what are you waiting for? Also, if you're watching on YouTube, do us a favor and drop a like and subscribe. Become part of our dark circle, listeners. And now, from author Owen Porter, I give you Beneath the Floor. Part 1. It started with the rug. Mark had inherited the house 6 months ago. It wasn't in terrible condition, but it needed work. After their father passed, his sister Sarah refused to take it. She said it felt too heavy, though she never explained what she meant. The responsibility fell to him, and he was fine with that. He had always been more sentimental than Sarah. Restoring the house felt like a way to stay connected to their childhood and maybe even to their father. The house wasn't huge, but it was old. The floorboards creaked, the windows stuck, and the whole place smelled faintly of dust and time. Still, it had charm. His favorite spot was the living room, a cozy place with faded wallpaper and a massive old rug that had been there for as long as he could remember. That rug was the first thing he decided to replace. It was heavier than he expected. He had to yank it several times to peel it off the floor, and when he finally did, he saw the trap door. It was square, about 3 feet across, reinforced with iron bands that were rusted and pitted. The wood looked ancient, almost petrified, with strange symbols etched into its surface. Jagged, intersecting lines that didn't form anything recognizable. He didn't remember the trapdoor being there when they were kids, but then again, the rug had always been in that spot. At first, he assumed it led to a cellar, but something about it felt off. Maybe it was the cold draft seeping through the edges, or the faint smell of damp earth. Or maybe it was the whisper. It was so faint he thought he'd imagined it, a soft, fleeting sound, like someone sighing just out of earshot. He crouched down and pressed his ear to the wood. Nothing. Just silence. He shook his head and laughed at himself. It's an old house. Old houses make noise. Still, he couldn't shake the unease the trapdoor gave him. The next morning, he texted Chris, his oldest friend, and asked him to come by. Chris had been helping with the renovations, and a second opinion wouldn't hurt. When he arrived, Mark led him straight to the living room. "Check this out," he said, pointing to the trapdoor. Chris frowned, kneeling to inspect it. "That's weird," he muttered, running his fingers over the iron bands. "You sure you didn't know this was here?" "Nope. Pretty sure it's a secret passage to Narnia, though," Mark joked, trying to ignore the prickling sensation on the back of his neck. Chris snorted. "Yeah, or a serial killer's basement." Mark handed him a crowbar, and they spent the next half hour trying to pry the door open. It didn't budge. The wood felt almost fused to the frame, as if it had grown into the iron. Chris stepped back, wiping sweat from his brow. "Maybe it's just sealed shut," he said. "Could have been nailed down ages ago." "Maybe," Mark said, though he didn't believe it. Chris left after lunch, promising to look up ways to unseal old wood. Mark stayed in the living room, staring at the trap door. That uneasy feeling hadn't gone away. Over the next week, he worked on other parts of the house, but his thoughts kept drifting back to the trap door. At night, he started hearing noises, soft, indistinct murmurs that seemed to come from below. At first, he dismissed them as imagination. Maybe it was just the wind or the house settling. But the more he listened, the more certain he became that the sounds were deliberate, not random creaking or groaning. Whispers. He recorded them with his phone one night, hoping to prove to himself they weren't real. But when he played the recording back, all he heard was static. Sarah came by the following weekend to drop off a box of Dad's old photo albums. She hadn't set foot in the house since the funeral, and she looked uncomfortable the entire time she was there. "I don't know how you're doing this," she said, setting the box down on the kitchen counter. "Living here, I mean. It feels heavy." "There it is again," Mark said, half laughing. "What does that even mean?" She shrugged. "I don't know. I never liked this house, especially not that living room." "The living room?" Mark raised an eyebrow. She hesitated. "Do you remember when we were kids and I used to say I heard things at night? Like voices?"
"Vaguely."
"They came from that room." She glanced toward the living room doorway, then shook her head.
"Forget it, I'm being stupid. You've got enough on your plate without me dragging up old crap."
Mark wanted to ask more, but she left before he could. That night, he dreamt of the trap door. In the dream, he was standing in the living room, staring down at it.
The symbols on the wood glowed faintly, pulsing gently. Slowly, the door creaked open, revealing a gaping void beneath. It wasn't a cellar. It wasn't even a hole. It was nothingness, an endless black expanse filled with faint shapes writhing just beyond the edge of visibility. And then the whispers started. They were louder than before, layered and overlapping, like dozens of voices speaking at once. He couldn't understand the words, but he felt them, cold and sharp, piercing through his skull. He woke with a start, on the verge of a panic attack. The murmurs were still there, faint but unmistakable, seeping up through the floorboards. Part 2. The whispers grew louder after that dream. At first, they were faint murmurs that Mark could ignore, but over the next few nights, they became sharper, more distinct. He could make out individual voices, though he couldn't understand what they were saying. The words were foreign, twisted in a way that made them feel wrong, as though they weren't meant for human ears. He told himself it was stress. Renovating a house was a massive undertaking, and his sleep schedule was erratic. But the more he heard those voices, the harder it became to rationalize. By the third night, he wasn't sleeping at all. Chris stopped by again the next morning. He took one look at Mark and frowned. "You look awful." "Thanks," Mark muttered. "Still messing with that trapdoor?" Mark hesitated before nodding. "It's weird. I've been hearing things, like whispers. I thought maybe it was the wind, but..."
"Whoa, hold up," Chris interrupted, raising a hand. "You're saying the trapdoor is talking to you?"
"It's not talking. It's just noises. You'd hear it too if you stayed here overnight." Chris shook his head, laughing.
"You're losing it, man. It's an old house. Pipes creak, wood shifts, the wind gets in. That's all it is."
"I'm not imagining this," Mark said, his voice firmer than he intended. Chris raised his hands in surrender.
"All right, all right. Tell you what, I'll stay the night. We can camp out in the living room, and if I hear anything, I'll believe you. Deal?"
That night, they dragged blankets into the living room and set up on the floor. Chris brought a six-pack, and for a while, it felt like old times, just the two of them hanging out, shooting the breeze. But as the hours stretched on, the mood shifted. The air grew colder, the way it does before a thunderstorm. Chris noticed it too, checking the windows to make sure they were shut. Around midnight, the whispers started. At first, they were so faint that Chris didn't hear them. When Mark pointed it out, he still looked skeptical. But as the minutes passed, the sound grew louder. Chris sat up.
"What the hell was that?" he said.
Mark didn't answer. He was too focused, trying to pick out words, phrases, anything that made sense.
"Is someone outside?" Chris asked, his voice tight.
"No," Mark said. "It's coming from the trap door." They both stared at it. The iron bands seemed to glisten faintly in the dim light, and for a moment, Mark thought he saw the symbols shift as if writhing beneath the surface. Chris stood and grabbed the crowbar from the corner of the room.
"All right, screw this, let's open it."
"Chris, wait!" Before Mark could stop him, Chris jammed the crowbar into the seam of the trap door and heaved. The wood groaned, but the door didn't budge. He tried again, putting his full weight into it, but the crowbar slipped free and clattered to the floor.
"It's stuck," Chris muttered, rubbing his hands.
"It's more than that," Mark said. "It's sealed, like fused shut." Chris shook his head.
"I don't know, man. Maybe it's not worth messing with. Whatever's down there, it's been sealed for a reason."
"You're the one who wanted to open it."
"Yeah, well, now I don't."
Chris didn't spend the night after that. He left in a hurry, muttering something about having work in the morning, and told Mark to call him if he needed anything. Mark didn't call. The whispers didn't stop. If anything, they grew louder, By the fifth night, he could hear them even when he wasn't in the living room. They followed him into the kitchen, the hallway, his bedroom. The house hummed with unseen voices. He started recording them again, this time using his laptop. He set the microphone on the floor next to the trapdoor and let it run for hours. When he played the audio back, his stomach twisted. There was nothing, just static. He tried boosting the volume, filtering out background noise, even slowing it down. No whispers, no voices, just a faint, rhythmic hum that sounded like breathing. The nightmares returned, more vivid than before. He dreamt of the trapdoor again. The symbols glowed, casting the room in an eerie blue light. The whispers were deafening, a chorus of voices calling his name, urging him to open the door. This time, he listened. He reached down, grabbed the iron ring embedded in the wood, and pulled. The door opened with a low, guttural groan, and he stared into the void. It was the same as before, endless blackness, shifting forms twisting in the dark. But this time, one of them reached out to him. A hand, if it could be called that, emerged from the void, its fingers impossibly long and thin, each one tipped with jagged claws. He woke up, screaming. The voices were still there, louder than ever, seeping through the walls, pressing into his skull. He couldn't ignore it anymore. The next morning, he started researching the house, hoping to find some record of the trapdoor. He combed through property records, blueprints, and historical archives, but there was nothing. No mention of a cellar, no record of renovations. It was as if the trapdoor didn't exist. Frustrated, he took photos of the symbols and posted them on forums, hoping someone might recognize them. Most of the replies were jokes, but one caught his attention. "Those look like warding runes. You sure you want to mess with that?" Warding runes. The phrase stuck with him. If the trapdoor was sealed with runes, then someone had put them there deliberately. Someone had gone to great lengths to keep whatever was below contained. But why? And for how long? The questions gnawed at him, driving him deeper into obsession. He couldn't focus on anything else. Every time he tried to distract himself, the whispers pulled him back, reminding him of the trapdoor, of the void, of the things waiting in the dark. By the time the sun set, he knew what he had to do. Part 3. The house felt different now. Mark couldn't explain it, but the air seemed heavier. Every creak of the floorboards, every groan of the walls felt deliberate, like the house was breathing, alive, watching. He told himself it was just in his head, a side effect of too many sleepless nights. But deep down, he knew better. It wasn't just the whispers anymore. The first time he noticed something move, he was in the kitchen. He had set his coffee mug down on the counter and turned to grab his phone from the table. When he turned back, the mug was gone. He found it minutes later on the floor by the trap door. At first, he convinced himself he had carried it there without realizing, but the more he thought about it, the less sense it made. He stared at the trap door, his chest tight, waiting for something to happen. The house was silent except for the faint murmur of the whispers, so soft he could almost pretend they weren't there. Almost. The next night, it got worse. He had just gotten into bed when he heard a noise, a soft thump, like something heavy being dragged across the floor. It was faint, but unmistakable, and it was coming from the living room. He stayed frozen for what felt like hours, straining to listen. The sound came again, louder this time. His stomach churned as he climbed out of bed and grabbed the baseball bat he had kept since high school. He told himself it was nothing, a raccoon maybe, or a branch scraping against the window. But when he reached the living room, he knew that wasn't true. The furniture had moved. The couch, the coffee table, even the old armchair, everything had shifted a few inches closer to the trapdoor. He stood there, bat in hand, his mind racing. The whispers were louder now, layered and overlapping, almost like laughter. He backed out of the room and locked himself in his bedroom, but he didn't sleep. The next morning, Sarah called. "Are you okay?" she asked. Her voice was tight, concerned. "Why wouldn't I be?" Mark replied, forcing a laugh. "Chris called me," she said. "He said you're acting strange." "Chris is overreacting." "Maybe," she admitted. "But I'm worried about you too. You haven't been answering my texts, and when I came by last week..." She trailed off. "What?" Mark pressed. "It felt wrong," she said quietly. "The house. I can't explain it, but something isn't right there. I think you should leave." "I'm not leaving," Mark said, sharper than he intended. She hesitated. "What's going on? You can tell me." He wanted to. He wanted to tell her everything. The whispers, the trap door, the nightmares. But he knew how it would sound. "I'm fine," he lied. "Just tired." "Call me if you need anything," she said after a long pause.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SPINQUEST.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
That night, the trapdoor changed. Mark had been avoiding the living room as much as possible, but the whispers made that difficult. They weren't just coming from the trapdoor anymore. They followed him, seeping through the walls, echoing in his head. By midnight, he gave up trying to sleep and went to the living room. The furniture was back in place, but the trapdoor, it was glowing. Faintly, almost imperceptibly, the symbols carved into the wood pulsed with a dim blue light. He crouched down, staring at them, his breath unsteady. The whispers grew louder the closer he got, and for the first time, he thought he understood them.
"Open."
He scrambled back, breathing hard. His hands trembled as he pressed them to his ears, but it didn't help. The voices were inside his head now, filling every corner of his mind.
"Open. Open. Open."
He grabbed the crowbar and brought it down on the trapdoor with all the strength he could muster. The sound echoed through the house, and for a moment, the murmuring stopped. But the trapdoor didn't budge. He started noticing other things, shadows that moved when they shouldn't, a cold breeze that swept through the house, even with all the windows shut, the faint sound of footsteps at night, always leading toward the living room. He told himself it was stress, lack of sleep, anything but what he knew deep down was true. A few days later, Sarah showed up unannounced. She took one look at him and paled. "Mark, you look like a corpse."
"Thanks," he muttered, stepping aside to let her in.
The moment she entered the house, her expression changed. She looked around, brow furrowed, her movement stiff.
"What's wrong?" he asked.
"Do you feel that?" she replied.
"Feel what?"
She didn't answer. She just walked into the living room, her eyes locking onto the trapdoor.
"What the hell is that?"
"It's nothing," he said quickly. Sarah shook her head.
"Mark, that's not nothing," she said, pointing to the faintly glowing symbols. "What is this? Why is it glowing?"
"I don't know," he admitted. "I've tried everything to open it, but..."
"Open it?"
Her voice rose.
"Why would you want to open it?"
I just need to know what's down there.
Sarah turned to him, her face pale.
You need to leave, she said. Now, whatever this is, it's bad. You can feel it, can't you? The house, it's wrong.
I can't just leave, Mark said. This is my house, my responsibility.
No, it's not, she snapped. Mark, this isn't normal. It's not safe. Please, come and stay with me for a while. We can figure this out together.
He wanted to believe her. He wanted to walk away, to pretend the whispers and the trap door didn't exist. But he couldn't. I'm fine, he said. Sarah stared at him for a long time, searching his face. Finally, she sighed.
Call me if you change your mind.
That night, he dreamt of the trap door again. This time, the void wasn't empty. The shapes he had seen before were clearer now, grotesque, writhing forms that shifted and merged like living clay. One of them turned toward him, its face, or what passed for a face, stretching into an impossibly wide grin. Its voice was a low, guttural rumble.
Open.
Mark woke, drenched in sweat, the whispers echoing in his ears. Part 4. The trap door was consuming him. Mark spent hours sitting by it, staring at the etched symbols, watching for any changes. The glowing had become constant now, faint but unrelenting. Every time he left the room, it felt like it was calling him back, murmuring in the voice of an old friend he couldn't quite place. He started avoiding Chris and Sarah entirely. They wouldn't understand. They couldn't. They hadn't seen the things he'd seen, hadn't felt the pull of the trapdoor like he did. When his phone buzzed with a text or call, he ignored it. He didn't need anyone telling him he was losing it. The whispers were louder now, no matter where he went in the house. At times, they felt so close it was as if someone was standing just behind him, murmuring directly into his ear. Once, he spun around, expecting to see someone there. But there was nothing, only empty space. He barely slept. The nightmares wouldn't let him. One night, he dreamed he was in the void again, surrounded by those grotesque, shifting forms. They pressed closer this time, their mouths moving in sync as they whispered a single word.
Open.
He woke with a jolt. The voices remained ever present, louder than ever. They didn't stop even when he clamped his hands over his ears. That morning, he made the decision. If the trap door wouldn't open, he'd force it. He grabbed a sledgehammer from the garage and went to work, bringing it down on the wood with everything he had. The house echoed with the sound of each impact, and for a moment, the whispers seemed to falter, growing softer, almost hesitant. But the trap door didn't give. No matter how hard he hit it, the wood wouldn't crack, the iron bands wouldn't bend. It was as if the entire thing was impervious to force, as if it existed outside the physical rules of this world. By the time he stopped, his arms ached and his hands were blistered. He sank to the floor, panting, staring at the door in frustration. The whispers returned, louder now, almost mocking. That night, the house turned on him. He was sitting in the living room, staring at the trap door, when the temperature in the room suddenly plummeted. Then, the lights went out. He sat there in the dark, paralyzed with fear. The whispers were deafening now, a chaotic jumble of voices that overlapped and clashed, forming a sound that was almost like laughter. Mark scrambled to his feet, fumbling for the flashlight he had left on the coffee table. As he clicked it on, the beam swept across the room and landed on a shadow. It was tall, abnormally tall, standing in the far corner of the room. Its shape was wrong, its edges blurry and indistinct, as if it was only half-formed. He stared, unable to move,
as the shadow slowly turned toward him. Two pinpricks of light appeared where its eyes should have been, and for a moment, he thought he heard it speak, not in words, but in a deep, guttural rumble that resonated in his bones. He blinked, and it was gone. After that, he couldn't convince himself he was imagining things. Whatever was in the house, whatever was under the trap door, it was real. Mark became obsessed. He stopped eating, stopped sleeping, stopped answering the phone. His days blurred together, each one spent in a haze of whispers, shadows, and cold, suffocating dread. One night, he decided to try something different. He remembered the comment on the forum about warding runes and decided to do some research. He spent hours scouring the internet, looking up symbols, rituals, anything that might help him understand what he was dealing with. Most of it was nonsense, new age garbage about energy fields and chakras, but eventually he found a thread about ancient sealing rituals, the kind used to trap malevolent entities. The symbols matched. According to the thread, the runes were meant to bind whatever was beneath the door, to keep it contained, but they were also fragile. If the seal was tampered with too much, it could weaken and eventually break. Mark stared at the trap door, his stomach twisting. Had he already done too much? The whispers seemed to answer, growing louder, more insistent. By the time Sarah showed up again, Mark was a wreck. She let herself in after he ignored her calls for over a week, and when she saw him, her face went pale. "Mark," she said, her voice trembling. "What the hell is going on?" He didn't answer. He couldn't. She walked into the living room, stopping short when she saw the trap door, its symbols glowing brighter than ever. Her stomach churned. "What did you do?" she whispered. "I had to," Mark said, his voice hoarse. "You had to?" she snapped. "Mark, look at yourself. You're not sleeping, you're not eating. You're destroying yourself over this." "You don't understand," he said. "It's not just a door. There's something down there. Something that needs me." She stared at him, her expression a mixture of fear and disbelief. "You're scaring me." Mark's eyes darkened. "Good," he said. Sarah took a step back, her hands shaking. "I can't do this," she said. "I'm calling someone. Chris, the police, anyone who can help." Mark didn't stop her as she left. That night, Mark dreamed of the void again. This time, it wasn't just a dream. He was standing in the living room, the trap door open at his feet. The void stretched out before him, an endless expanse of darkness filled with those writhing, grotesque forms. One of them rose to meet him, its shape shifting as it moved. It didn't have a face, but he could feel its gaze on him. Cold, heavy, filled with something he couldn't name. It reached out, its fingers impossibly long, tipped with jagged claws. And then, it touched his chest. Mark woke up gasping. The whispers were louder than ever, filling the room, the house, his head.
"Open," they said.
This time, he knew he would. Part 5. The trapdoor wouldn't wait any longer. Mark knew it the moment he woke from the latest dream, the sensation of that thing's touch still burning in his chest. The house hummed with energy now, alive with something ancient and impossible. The murmurs no longer came and went. They were constant, surrounding him, seeping into his mind. He couldn't fight it anymore. He didn't want to. That night, he sat by the trap door, staring at the glowing runes, bright now, The whispers had grown clearer, too, forming words and phrases that he could almost understand. They weren't just calling to him. They were pleading. Mark reached out, running his fingers over the rough wood. The surface was warm, almost hot, and the symbols seemed to writhe under his touch. A strange sense of calm settled over him. He felt as if he'd finally found his purpose. The next thing he knew, the lights went out. The house fell into darkness, but the trapdoor's glow remained, casting eerie shadows that danced along the walls. A cold breeze swept past him, carrying with it the faint smell of damp earth and decay. The whispers increased in intensity until they were deafening, and the house seemed to tremble beneath him. Mark stood, his legs shaky, and gripped the iron ring embedded in the wood. The moment he touched it, the voices stopped. The silence was worse. He hesitated, his fingers tightening around the ring. A voice in the back of his mind screamed at him to stop, to leave the house and never come back. But it was too late. With a deep breath, he pulled. The trapdoor groaned, the wood splintering as it finally gave way. A wave of cold air burst from below, extinguishing the glow of the runes and plunging the room into darkness. Mark grabbed the flashlight from the floor and aimed it at the opening, but the beam didn't reach the bottom. All he saw was blackness, an endless, yawning void that seemed to swallow the light. Then, the shapes began to move. At first, they were just shifting shadows at the edge of the darkness, but as he stared, they became clearer, their forms grotesque and unnatural. They writhed and twisted, merging and separating in ways that made his stomach churn. One of them rose higher than the others, its body stretching unnaturally. It had no face, but he felt its gaze settle on him, heavy and unrelenting. The whispers returned, louder than ever, but this time they weren't coming from the void. They were coming from inside his head. "Come," they said. Mark took a step back, his hands trembling. What are you?" he whispered. The thing tilted its head, as if it were considering the question. Then it reached out, its elongated fingers tipped with jagged claws. "Come," it said again. Mark didn't know how long he stood there, frozen in place. Time didn't seem to exist at that moment. The world outside the living room felt distant and unreal. The thing moved closer, its body undulating as it crossed the threshold of the trapdoor. It didn't leave the void completely, but its presence filled the room. Mark couldn't breathe. He stumbled back, tripping over the coffee table and landing hard on the floor. The flashlight slipped from his hand, rolling away, its erratic beam slicing across the walls. The thing reached for him, its claws brushing against his leg. The touch was ice cold, burning through his skin like fire. He screamed. Somehow, he managed to crawl away, dragging himself toward the hallway. His hands slipped on the wooden floor, his limbs weak and uncooperative. The whispers followed him, growing louder, more frantic. "Don't run," they said. "Stay." Mark reached the doorway and pulled himself into the hall, slamming the door shut behind him. For a moment, the voices stopped. The house was silent again. But then, the pounding started. It wasn't coming from the walls or the ceiling. It was coming from the trap door. The sound reverberated through the house, shaking the floor beneath him. Mark pressed his back against the door, trying desperately to regain his composure. The whispers returned, layered and chaotic, drowning out his thoughts. The thing wasn't just calling to him anymore. It was angry. He could feel its rage, its frustration, as it pressed against the only barrier separating it from him. The pounding grew louder and more desperate, and the wood began to splinter under the force. He knew it wouldn't hold for long. Mark stumbled to his feet and ran to the kitchen, grabbing the heaviest piece of furniture he could find, the old oak table. He dragged it into the hallway, pushing it against the door, reinforcing it as best he could. The pounding continued, each impact rattling the table and sending vibrations through the floor. He didn't know what to do. His mind raced, his thoughts a jumble of panic and terror. And then, just as suddenly as it had started, the pounding stopped. Mark stood there, waiting for something, anything, to happen. He edged toward the door, placing his ear against the wood. The whispers were faint again, barely audible. He took a deep breath and pushed the table aside, opening the door just a crack. The living room was empty. The trap door was closed. Mark didn't sleep that night. He couldn't. He sat in the kitchen, staring at the doorway to the living room, waiting for the whispers to return. They didn't. But the silence wasn't comforting. It felt like the calm before the storm, a brief reprieve before something worse. He didn't know how much longer he could take this. Part 6. The house was silent when Sarah arrived the next morning. She banged on the door for several minutes before finally letting herself in. Her footsteps echoed in the empty hallway as she called out, her voice tight with concern. Mark? No answer. The kitchen was empty, the coffee still cold in the pot. The living room looked undisturbed, save for the faint marks on the floor where furniture had been dragged. The trap door sat in the middle of the room, closed and silent, the runes no longer glowing, but the air felt wrong. Mark, if you're here, say something, she called, stepping closer to the trap door. She froze as she heard it, faint murmurs rising and falling in a rhythmic cadence. They seemed to come from everywhere at once, yet nowhere at all. Mark, she called softly, her voice trembling. The whispers grew louder. Chris arrived not long after. Sarah had called him in a panic, telling him something was wrong. Together, they searched the house from top to bottom, but there was no sign of Mark. His keys were still on the kitchen counter. His phone sat on the coffee table. It was as if he had vanished into thin air. Chris stared at the trap door, his jaw tight. What the hell is that? Sarah shook her head. I don't know. The murmurs continued to build, filling the room with an otherworldly hum. Chris rubbed the back of his neck, clearly uneasy. We should call the cops, he said. Sarah hesitated. I know, but what are we going to tell them, Chris? That my brother disappeared into a glowing trap door? They'll think we're insane. Chris didn't respond. He just stared at the trap door, his expression impossible to read. They stayed in the house for hours, waiting for something to happen, but the whispers didn't change, and the trap door didn't move. Finally, as the sun began to set, Sarah stood. I'm going to check upstairs again, and then we'll call the police, okay? Chris nodded, but didn't move. He was still staring at the trap door, his arms crossed over his chest. As Sarah's footsteps faded, the murmurs grew softer, almost imperceptible. Chris leaned down, pressing his ear to the wood. Mark? He asked. The whispers stopped. For a moment, the house was completely silent. And then, a voice spoke. Come. Chris stumbled back, his face pale. Sarah? He called. She came running, her eyes wide with alarm. What? What happened? Chris's voice shook. It spoke, he said. It said... The trap door creaked. Neither of them moved as the sound echoed through the room. The creaking grew louder, the wood groaning as if under immense pressure. And then... It stopped. The trap door didn't open, but the whispers returned, louder than ever, overlapping and chaotic, forming words they couldn't understand. Sarah grabbed Chris's arm, her grip tight. We need to leave, she rasped. Now!
Chris nodded, his eyes still locked on the trap door. The police arrived the next day, responding to Sarah's report of a missing person. They combed through the house, searching for clues, but they found nothing. No signs of foul play, no evidence of where Mark had gone. One officer noticed the trap door and tried to open it, but it wouldn't budge. The wood was solid, the iron bands rusted but intact. It looked as if it hadn't been touched in decades. It's probably just a sealed-off cellar, the officer said, brushing it off. But Sarah couldn't stop staring at it. The whispers were faint now, barely audible, but she could still hear them. Weeks passed. The house sat empty. Chris and Sarah tried to keep their distance, but the silence weighed on them. They couldn't stop thinking about the trap door, about the whispers, about the way the house seemed to breathe around them. One night, Sarah drove back to the house. She told herself it was just to grab some of Mark's things, but she knew that wasn't the truth. When she stepped inside, the whispers greeted her. She found herself in the living room, standing over the trap door. It looked the same as before, worn, rusted, unremarkable, but the air around it felt alive, vibrating with something she couldn't see. She knelt down, straining her ears. The whispers grew louder, more distinct.
Open, they said.
She shot to her feet. No, she cried, backing away. No, I won't. The trap door creaked. The following day, the house was empty again. Chris called Sarah several times, but she didn't answer. When he went to check on her car was still parked in the driveway. The keys were still in the ignition. Inside, the house was silent. The trap door was closed. The house remains empty now, its windows dark, its walls silent. But if you listen closely, standing just outside, you can hear it. The whispers, calling, waiting.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You've been listening to Beneath the Floor by Owen Porter. Owen Porter is a writer of psychological and supernatural horror, specializing in unsettling, slow-burn narratives that blend eerie folklore with modern anxieties. His stories often explore themes of obsession, reality distortion, and unseen cosmic forces lurking beneath the mundane. Born and raised in the Pacific Northwest, Porter developed a fascination with the region's dense forests, abandoned structures, and lingering ghost stories. Porter is notoriously reclusive, preferring the solitude of his lakeside cabin, where, he claims, the quiet hum of the trees provides the perfect backdrop for writing. Next, this is There's Something Different About Her by Raz T. Slasher. As Lynn drove off to visit her parents, I waved with a smile. I was going to enjoy the next week. Sure, I'd miss her, but it was going to be great hanging with the guys, too. 7 days wasn't a long time, but it was long enough. As much as my friends make fun of me, I'm truly in love with her. We'd never been apart for longer than a weekend before, but even then, we'd checked in with each other a few times a day. Unfortunately, she and her parents were vacationing in a cabin out in the woods, so the cell phone reception would be pretty spotty if it existed at all. Living out in the country ourselves, cell service issues were something we'd grown used to.
Still, the cabin they were staying at was so remote that I likely wouldn't hear from her until they were leaving. Hopefully, everything would go well and the time would fly by quickly. Later that evening, I went out with my buddies Greg and Nick. We'd planned to hit up a nearby bar where one of our favorite local bands was playing. Thankfully, Nick had volunteered to be the designated driver, so Greg and I got completely wasted. The music was amazing. It took us back to the days of our youth, spent in bars and clubs all over the state playing shows of our own. I even bought the band a round of drinks and talked to them for a little while. Nick dropped me off at home, and I wandered up to the front door. I took my keys from my pocket and slipped one into the lock. I went to turn the key, but found the door was already unlocked. That was odd. I could have sworn I'd locked it on my way out. I went on high alert. I quickly stumbled into the house, grabbing a huge umbrella from the nearby stand as I went. I staggered into the living room with it held over my head and came to an abrupt halt, seeing Lynn sitting there reading a book. I pulled a smooth move and put the umbrella away before she noticed. "Have a good night, babe?" I raised a brow and moved to sit next to her on the couch. "Yeah, it was awesome. Shrug was playing tonight. What are you doing home, babe? I thought you were on the road to the cabin earlier." She smiled and shrugged as she replied. "About a half hour or so after I left, I got a call from Mom saying that Dad wasn't doing too well, that we had to postpone until next weekend. It kinda sucks, but since I don't work weekends, I guess it's not really that big a deal." That was a little concerning. "What's wrong with your dad? Is everything okay?" She nodded and put a hand on my leg. "Yeah, just his blood pressure again, it sounds like. You know how stressed out he is all the time." I nodded. Her father had indeed seemed more anxious than usual lately. I adored that man, truly. He'd given me a lot of amazing advice over the years and welcomed me into their family almost immediately. He'd become more of a father to me than my own father had ever been. I don't know what I'd do without him. The room was still spinning a bit from all the alcohol, and I looked longingly at the kitchen. I hadn't realized how hungry I was until that moment. I looked back at Lynn with a silly grin on my face. "Babe, how much do you love me?" She set her book down on the coffee table. She tossed a smirk my way and raised an inquisitive brow. She knew me well. "More than anything. But an exact answer depends on what it is you want." I drunkenly chuckled at that and affected a royal accent. "I would give you my kingdom for a bacon burger right now." Lynn rolled her eyes at my comment. "And what kingdom would that be, Aaron?" My smile faded a bit as it took all the concentration I possessed to think of a name. My finger shot into the air as the perfect reply hit me. "The kingdom of Never Sober, where the men drink all day and the ladies make bacon burgers. It's a magical world, really, full of great liquor and greasy foods. No one gets a hangover there either, which is why it's so magical." She seemed impressed that I was able to string all that together and took some time to blatantly laugh at me before responding. "Sounds like you live in a very sexist kingdom, sweetheart. What if I want to drink all day and have someone make me burgers?" I was quick to respond. "Yes, I thought you might say that. As the king of Never Sober, I hereby make you my queen. You shall drink or make burgers on alternating days, except for Sundays when we shall drink together and eat pizza. Because, let's be honest, sometimes you just need a break from burgers." That elicited another grin and laugh from Lynn. She ran her fingers through my hair for a moment before slipping off the couch. "Only because I love you, my king, shall I make thy burger that thou hast so humbly requested." I was a little surprised. While she did cook for me generally, she'd usually suggest that we get some fast food or something so she didn't have to cook so late. I assumed she was just in a great mood and decided not to question it, lest my bacon burger be forsaken. I lay down on the couch and closed my eyes to rest for a second. The next thing I knew, she was shaking me awake gently and laying my plated burger on the coffee table in front of me. Just as I shook off the sleep and woke myself up, she was coming back with a nice tall glass of milk. Ah, she knew me so well. I kissed her on the cheek and tucked into my food. I finished in record time and chugged the last half of my glass of milk to wash it all down. I looked over at her when I was done.
Thanks, baby. I'm lucky to have you.
She smirked at that before replying.
Damn right you are.
I laughed and stood up with a stretch. I took my plate to the kitchen sink and pre-washed the ketchup from it for easy cleanup later. I wandered back into the living room with a yawn before looking at her again.
I'm tired, baby. I think I'm gonna head to bed. Coming with me?
She smiled at me over her book as she responded.
I'm gonna stay down here and do some cleaning between chapters. I'll be up in a little while.
I bowed my head to her reverently while speaking.
I shall see thee on the morrow, my queen.
I left the room, followed by a new round of Lynn's laughter echoing down the hall. I somehow managed to climb the steps and ditch most of my clothes on the way to bed, where I quickly passed out. I woke up in the middle of the night to strange sounds coming from downstairs. A quick glance to the other side of the bed told me that Lynn hadn't made it to bed. I blinked my eyes a few times, forced myself to stand, and walked out of our bedroom and down the stairs. I walked as quietly as I could, out of habit, for the time of night. When I got to the bottom step, I looked both ways and ended up slowly following the sound to the bathroom. Noticing the door was cracked a little, I knocked on it before entering.
Is everything okay, babe?
I looked around the bathroom lazily before noticing the blood in the sink. I jolted completely awake and ran to her side. I thought I'd noticed a tooth, but before I had the time to take a decent look, she was already running hot water and washing whatever had been there down the drain. I stared at her reflection in the mirror.
Oh my God, baby, what happened?
She seemed pale, but otherwise okay, as she responded.
I'm fine, honey. It's just a nosebleed.
I was concerned. I couldn't remember the last time she'd had one.
Do you have a headache or anything?
She washed her face before responding tiredly.
No, just the nosebleed. It happens sometimes when the weather changes like this. Gotta love living in Ohio.
I eased a bit when I saw a slight smile creep across her features. I wrapped my arms around her and kissed the top of her head gently.
Let's go back to bed and I'll rub your shoulders. If you're still feeling bad tomorrow, I'll just call it a bed and Netflix day.
She smiled and nodded gingerly, allowing me to lead her back upstairs to bed. As promised, I rubbed her shoulders until she fell asleep. I passed out again soon afterward. I woke up the next morning and once again found her side of the bed empty. I yawned with a stretch, slipped out of bed, and headed for the bathroom. I was nursing one hell of a hangover, and the best way to start the day in this scenario was with a nice hot shower. As I got in and turned the faucet on, fine-tuning the temperature via the hot and cold knobs, I noticed something in the drain. There was a large amount of hair in there that hadn't been there the day before. It was a little odd, but not completely out of the ordinary. I ignored it and enjoyed the water flowing over my skin. I wasted about 30 minutes there before getting out to towel off. I pulled on some flannel pajama pants and the first t-shirt I pulled out of my drawer before heading downstairs. About halfway down, I caught the smell of pancakes and bacon. Bacon, twice in a row? This was like some previously unexplored version of heaven. I rushed down the rest of the steps, down the hallway, and into the kitchen. I slipped up behind her and wrapped my arms around her waist. She started a bit before turning around with a huge grin and a curtsy.
Your greasy breakfast is nearly ready, my liege.
I got a huge kick out of that and laid a gentle kiss on her lips before replying.
I can't remember the last time you got up early to cook me breakfast, babe. Are you sure you're feeling okay?
I was only half joking, still worried about her from the night before. She turned back around to flip the pancakes and shrugged.
I'll be fine. Just couldn't sleep, so I thought I'd surprise you with a nice breakfast. Coffee's ready if you want some. I put the bottle of ibuprofen next to the pot on the counter.
I sighed contentedly and headed for my bounty as I spoke.
What would I do without you, babe?
She chuckled and flipped the pancakes again as she replied,
I ask myself that same question every day.
I groaned, good-naturedly, poured some coffee, took a couple of ibuprofen, and sat at the kitchen table to relax.
Halfway through my first cup, she served me a ham and cheese omelet, some buttermilk pancakes, and the glorious bacon. I put a hand on her arm before she made her own plate. I really appreciate this, babe. Love you. She winked at me and stole a quick kiss before making her plate and joining me at the table. We sat there for a while, eating, drinking coffee, and making small talk. Even though she insisted that she was feeling okay, I still couldn't help but worry about her. I did convince her to have that bed and Netflix stay, after all. We spent most of the day and evening binge-watching episodes of American Horror Story, one of her favorite shows. We even took turns getting snacks from the kitchen and talking about plot points. It was nearly 3 a.m. by the time we realized it. After the last episode of the season about the freak show, Lynn kissed my cheek and slipped out of bed. "I'm gonna go take a bath and read for a bit, babe." I nodded and called after her. "If I haven't heard from you in an hour or so, I'll check on you." I flipped through the newly added section of Netflix to find something that would catch my interest. Like always, I ended up scanning every inch of it, which ate up 30 minutes of my time. In the end, I settled on watching an episode of 30 Rock. When that was over, I headed downstairs to check on Lynn. I found her in the tub, reading her Kindle. The water looked a little red, but I assumed she'd used some bath salts or something. I sat on the closed toilet next to the tub and smiled over at her. "You doing okay in there? It's been about an hour." She lowered the Kindle to look over at me. "Yeah, I just got caught up in this book. I'll be out in a bit." I kissed her forehead and headed back upstairs to bed. I watched a couple more episodes of 30 Rock. By the time the 2-hour mark had passed, I wandered back down to check on her again. She'd never stayed in the tub for this long. She must be going for a new personal best, I joked with myself. By the time I got there, the bathroom was empty, and a dark red ring lined the inside of the tub. There was also a strange smell in the room that I couldn't put my finger on, a smell that hadn't been present an hour ago. I left the bathroom and went in search of her. It didn't take long. She was wrapped in a towel on the couch, reading. "Babe, are you sure everything's okay? I just found the weirdest stuff in the tub." She looked up curiously. "Like I've told you 100 times today, honey, I'm fine. Sorry I accidentally used too much bubble bath stuff. I'll rinse it out better before I come to bed so it doesn't stain." That explained the red ring, but not the smell. I decided to let it go for now. I carefully unwrapped the towel from her body, ditched my clothes, and we made love right there on the couch. We'd been lacking some spontaneity lately, and it was nice to just go with the flow of things, so to speak. It turned out to be the best sex I'd ever had. I couldn't quite explain it. It was almost like making love to another person. She'd done things she'd never done before, and it drove me absolutely wild. I carried her to bed afterward, and we curled up together and passed right out.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Despite work, the whole week went like that. There was breakfast every morning, dinner every night, amazing sex, sometimes more than once a day, and random disappearances at odd times for baths. I found that red ring in the tub a few more times, an increasing amount of hair in the drain, and I would swear I saw a tooth in the sink the other day. I was met with increasing levels of annoyance whenever I asked her how she was feeling. Then, the strangest thing of all happened on Thursday morning. On my way to work, I'd gotten a voicemail from her boss wondering if she was all right. When I asked Lynn about it, she told me she'd taken the week off work and maybe the manager had forgotten about it. Lynn said she'd give her a call and take care of it. Something about her felt off, yet at the same time, I was enjoying this new side of her. That night, while we were making love, something odd happened. We were in mid-kiss, when one of her teeth came out and made its way into my mouth. I gripped her face on either side carefully and broke the kiss in a panic. But when my fingers touched her skin, they sunk in slightly, and her face seemed to tear. She jumped up and ran to the bathroom, with me hot on her trail. She slammed the door in my face and locked it, refusing to let me in. That's when I heard my cell phone ring upstairs. No one ever called this late, so I assumed it was an emergency. I dashed up the stairs to grab my phone. I was in the process of answering it halfway back down the steps, and it was Lynn's mother.
"Aaron, hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Is something wrong with Jean?"
"No, it's Lynn. There's been an accident."
I jerked the phone away from my ear. I looked between it and the bathroom a few times in a stupor before responding. Had she called her mother?
"What's going on with Lynn? I've been worried for days." "We just made it to the hospital. Something attacked her out in the woods this morning. The doctors think it was a wolf or something, but we're not entirely sure yet. How quickly can you make it here?"
My whole world came to a standstill. How was that possible? Lynn was on the other side of that door. We'd just made love, for God's sake. None of this made any sense to me. With the phone in my hand, I slammed my foot hard enough into that bathroom door to pop the lock. As it flew open, I saw her, or at least what was left of her. Something stood there, devoid of skin, staring at me with Lynn's eyes. Its mouth opened into a sneer, revealing a glistening, moist hole full of broken teeth and bleeding gums. A twisted hand clawed out at me, ripping into the flesh of my chest. I screamed and dropped the phone as the creature tried to pull me into the bathroom. I put all my weight behind a boot to its left knee. It roared as it stumbled, its claws ripping from my flesh with a spray of blood. It bought me just enough time to get out of there. I heard Lynn's mom screaming over the phone as I ran by, but there was no time to pick it up. I tore down the hallway and through the living room to the front door. All the while, that thing screeched and dogged my every step. It was close enough that I could smell its rancid breath on my neck. I made it to the front door, but it was locked, and there wasn't enough time to flip the latch. I ducked as it clawed at me again, instead wedging those jagged claws right into the wood of the front door. It wailed as it wiggled around, attempting to dislodge itself. I grabbed a nearby lamp and smashed it over the thing's oozing head, and it barely even blinked. I took off once again, this time for the back door. I made it there quickly enough to unlock it and slip out into the night. The creature's bloodthirsty screeches thundered along behind me. Our closest neighbor was through the woods behind the house, barely a quarter of a mile away. I'd made the journey a few times over the last couple of years. It was usually an easy stroll between the properties, but at that moment, it might as well be across the country. I ducked through bushes and under branches, and all the while I heard it crashing along, slipping now and again from the gore that clung to its feet. I could hear sheets of quickly decaying flesh slough off the creature's impossibly thin frame as it chased me. It squished and oozed its way faster, starting to close the distance between us. I had no idea how close I was to the neighbor's house, nor how much longer I had before the thing overtook me. I barreled out of the woods. The neighbor's old brown and white cottage was right where I remembered it. My feet had barely passed the edge of the tree line when that thing grabbed me. Dark fluids soaked through the shoulder of my t-shirt as it jerked me to the ground. It looked down at me. Yellow, viscous fluid gushed from its mouth as its jaw popped like bubble wrap and unhinged itself. I watched in terror as its mouth opened far larger than was anatomically possible. Its fetid, steam-like breath expelled from cracked and rotting lips, leaving my skin oily. Just as it pulled back its claws once more for what surely would have been a death blow, its bulbous head exploded into bloody, rotten chunks everywhere, and it fell atop me.
I kicked it off and scooted backward as fast as I could, slipping and sliding across the gore-soaked grass. I slid and crab-walked in reverse until something solid arrested my momentum. I looked back to see my neighbor standing there with a smoking, double-barreled shotgun in his hands. He looked down at me briefly, then turned and gestured for me to come with him. Not thinking twice about it, I pulled myself to my feet and followed him inside. He sat me down on his couch and slipped a beer into my hands. He sat in a recliner across from me and lit his pipe. We sat there in silence for a while. I drank three beers in shock before we said a single word to one another. What was that thing? He filled me in as best he could. There was no name he knew to call it, but he'd killed a few of them over the years. They were known to take over the life of a loved one, and over time, they'd eat you alive before moving on to the next love-struck sucker. He'd experienced it a few years back himself. He didn't give me a lot of details about the encounter, but mentioned never seeing his wife again. Those words immediately snapped me back to reality. I borrowed his phone to call Lynn's mother. I calmed her down long enough to tell her I'd be on the way to the hospital as soon as I could and would explain everything when I got there. My neighbor drove me back to the house and even came inside, shotgun and all, while I grabbed my keys and packed a few things. Before I left, I locked up and thanked him for his assistance. He promised to tell me more about the creature when I came back. Lynn and I decided to move in with her parents for a while. Jean and I took care of the move while Lynn's mother took care of her. I never did speak to my neighbor about the creature. I couldn't handle any more information than I already had. To this day, I see my wife in a different way. When I stare into her eyes, all I can see is that creature looking back at me. I never told her or her family the truth of what happened. I made up lies about a stupid injury, and they didn't ask a lot of questions. This morning, I went to take a shower and noticed a foul-smelling ring in the tub. Lynn's mother made a grand breakfast that morning, too. I can't shake the feeling that there's something different about her. You've just heard There's Something Different About Her by Raz T. Slasher. Raz T. Slasher is a modern-day bard influenced by horror and speculative fiction. He earned a doctorate in pop culture and a master's in creative writing. Find him at raztslasher.com, The Owl Light Network, and Hell's Dungeon Haunted Attraction. Well, my friends, that just about wraps things up. Thank you all for joining me tonight, and extra thanks to Owen Porter and Raz T. Slasher for the tales. I'll be returning with more Horror Hill content next week, and I hope to see you all there. Until that time, listeners, stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted, narrated, scored, and finalized by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Additional music by Nikki McSorley. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at submissions@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your work considered for future production. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, why not help us spread our dark presence online? You can follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. It helps us out a lot and also keeps you up to date on new episodes. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend signing up to be a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights.
head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com to get started. If you're looking for someone to narrate or handle audio production for your own personal project, I just so happen to know a guy. Email me at ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com and we can talk details. That's ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That 2-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.